Are you ready?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us on The Change Artist, where we bring our listeners stories and great advice for leading and following through change from business leaders who are making a difference in their organizations. Here on The Change Artist, our motto is, if change is the only constant in life, then let's do it better. And this season, we're focusing specifically on data-driven leadership and the change required to realize the promise of the data-driven organization. So let's jump right in. Randy, how do you define data-driven leadership?
Yeah, I really define data-driven leadership as delivering business value. So I go into many organizations and I meet with the data teams and they talk to me about the capabilities they've created. I meet with the technology teams and they talk about the platforms and the architecture they built. And then I meet with a line of business leaders, the line of business CEOs, and they consistently tell me often that they don't trust the data that they're receiving. They're not receiving the data that they need to make critical decisions, and they're not receiving that data in a timely fashion. So unless you're delivering business value, you shouldn't be making investments in data capabilities. So that's one of the things that we see that distinguishes organizations that are data-driven from those who are not. There's strong business sponsorship, strong business participation, strong business use cases, and that's what drives the investments in data.
Wow, there is a lot to pick apart there. So I'm going to pause for a minute because I want to make sure we introduce you for our listeners. Now, for those of you who don't know him, Randy Bean is an industry thought leader, author, and speaker in the field of data-driven business leadership. He's the author of Fail Fast, Learn Faster, Lessons in Data-Driven Leadership in an Age of Disruption, Big Data, and AI, and a contributor to the Harvard Business Review, MIT Sloan Management Review, Forbes, and the Wall Street Journal on data-driven business leadership. He is also the founder and chief executive of New Vantage Partners, which serves as a strategic advisor in data-driven business leadership to Fortune 1000 organizations. So I want to come back into your definition of data-driven leadership, and I want to spend a minute talking about timeliness of data, because I think that in many cases, timeliness of data can be a leading indicator of how trustworthy people find the data to be and how usable people find the data to be. But as I think about what the timeliness is of data that senior executives get, oftentimes we see that it takes review upon review upon review all the way up the chain with that data before it even gets to senior leaders, at which point it may not even be timely enough to action upon. And so how do you think about and how do you work with your clients on shortening that time to insight and shortening that time to visibility specifically for senior leaders?
Thank you, Alyssa. Well, those are tough questions and they're not easy answers. So critical to achieving success from data initiatives, one is trust. So unless an organization, unless the users of data trust the data, it's hard to deliver value from that. At the same time, relevance is also a critical factor. So as you said, if you can't get the data to the decision makers in a timely fashion, the window of opportunity has passed. So there's this balance. You know, historically, organizations have spent 80% of their time on preparing data, leaving only 20% of the time to analyze data. One of the ways that organizations have tried to address this, you know, there's a variety of terms for it. Sometimes the term is democratization of data, which may be a bit overused, but the idea is to bring the data closer to the non-technical users, to the business analysts, to the business decision-making community, and providing tools and capabilities that end users and end analysts can begin to work with and identify that data which is most useful to them and helpful to them in making business decisions. It's always a slippery slope, or it's always a balance. In other words, if it's marketing decisions, if it's decisions where you can use data to be directionally correct, you don't need to be perfect. You can work with generalized data that's indicative. If you're making financial decisions for regulatory or risk and compliance, that's a different challenge, and that requires greater level of data quality assurance. So it depends in part upon what the application and use of data is, but for many functions, being able to work with directionally correct data that doesn't need to be perfect in every way gets the job done. It was Voltaire, the French writer and philosopher, who said, "Perfect is the enemy of good." And that's one of the challenges that the data profession has often faced, and that is sometimes people refer to it as analysis paralysis, and that is that you have to get everything perfect before you can make decisions. And that's not the case in most instances.
And so how do you help an organization with a history of linking terms like accountability to data precision? In many cases, precision or artificial precision, precision that isn't even truly there in the data and justifiable in the data. You know, how do you get those kinds of organizations over the hump of discomfort toward when is the data good enough so we can start really experimenting?
Yeah, and that's the notion behind the title of the book, Fail Fast, Learn Faster, this idea of greater innovation, shrinking cycle times, putting data into the hands of business decision makers or closer to business decision makers so that they can be the ultimate judges of what's good enough and when you have enough data and sufficient quality of data to make decisions. So I think it varies a little bit business to business and the business line and the activity that you're focusing on. And that's another reason to give ultimate decision-making authority to the line of business, because they're usually by nature closest to their end customer or their end constituent. And they can typically make the decisions about what's good enough in any particular instance.
And so then if we think about devolving the data decision-making authority, how does that marry with the trend that we've seen a lot of organizations of setting up dedicated data organizations and a chief data officer, right? How do we think about top-down ownership of the data and advocacy for data initiatives with that devolution of decision-making power?
Well, the chief data officer role manifests itself in a variety of ways in different organizations. First of all, it's a new role, largely within the past 10 years, so it's nascent, and organizations have very different expectations about the responsibilities and what that role should deliver, and even where that role should report. You know, over the past decade, we've seen chief data officers report into chief information officers. We've seen them report to chief operating officers. We've even seen them report to chief marketing officers and digital officers, not to mention chief financial officers. So there's no common blueprint, no one set of expectations. And along with that, the good news is that in appointing a chief data officer, an organization is elevating the importance of data to the C-suite, but it can manifest itself in a variety of ways in terms of implementation. The role can be highly centralized or it could be highly decentralized. So even with a CDO in a leadership role, how that is implemented can manifest itself in a variety of different ways. And the chief data officer can function as somebody who establishes policies and best practices, or they can manage data more directly. So it really depends upon the organization. And organizations that have chosen to decentralize, they're really giving more authority to the line of business leaders, but they're working with the chief data officer to set up some common standards, policies, practices, so that the organization at least is following a set of practices that learn from industry examples as well as success examples within each organization itself.
And what are some of the characteristics of the organization itself that might make a more centralized versus a more decentralized model appropriate for the business?
Well, for risk, compliance, and regulatory activities, a centralized model generally makes sense, or it makes sense for those line of businesses because there's certain very rigorous standards and practices you need to meet. Otherwise, you face, you know, regulatory involvement, interference, if you will. Whereas if it's business growth, customer acquisition, marketing, sales, those type of activities, you need to be very agile. You need to move very quickly. You can't afford to wait for perfect data. So some activities can be more experimental and others need to be more rigorous. And, you know, or organizations, even in terms of the responsibilities of the chief data officer, when the role was first established, particularly in regulatory industries, including financial services, pharmaceuticals, it was a very regulatory-oriented role because that's where a lot of the demands for greater data integrity were driven out of. But as these roles evolve, the CDO role has become increasingly involved in line of business activities, helping improve customer treatment, helping more effectively acquire customers. And that's where the experimentation and greater iteration and shorter cycle times come more directly into play.
Interesting. That makes a lot of sense. With the volume of data growing sort of exponentially over time, and what we see, at least in the popular media around continually seeing what you want to see in the media, seeing what you want to see in terms of the messages that you're interested in consuming, how do we think about within our organizations getting to the heart of what the data is really telling us, as opposed to having the data reinforce the things we already believe?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, obviously, you want to use data to the greatest extent possible to personalize customer experience. However, the reality of the data, and this is nothing new, but it's been exacerbated, is that historically, I remember 20 years ago, you could present some set of data in an executive board meeting about who are the customers of an organization. You could have 10 line of business leaders sit there, and there'd be widespread disagreement on how they define customers, what constitutes a customer. So you have data, but there's not agreement on what that data means or what the data is telling us. Today, we often see the same data presented and it's interpreted in diametrically opposed fashion. You could see this. This was really highlighted during the peak of the COVID epidemic when positivity rates and other information was presented and people said, well, that means we do this. And others would say, well, this means we do the exact opposite. So data in itself is subject to subjective interpretation. And the same data can be used to make very, very different or even opposite arguments. And it all comes down to the narrative that's created around that data. So data can be helpful in enabling organizations to have some metrics and measures and guides relative to making more informed decision-making, but data can also be, for lack of a better term, politicized to support any particular agenda if the narrative is constructed in a way that utilizes data or cherry picks that data to support the story as opposed to looking at the data objectively. And even then, you look at it objectively and it is subject to degrees of interpretation.
What are you seeing from your clients in terms of incorporation of tools like natural language generation and natural language processing in conjunction with dashboard building to try to drive a more consistent experience across the organization for self-service in data?
Well, that's a funny question to me because I worked with natural language processing 30 plus years ago. So a lot of these capabilities have been around for a long time. However, now data has proliferated and there's greater computing power, so that there's now more data to work with, so you can actually generate capabilities that are predictive in some fashion. I have a colleague who many, many years ago received his PhD in AI, and over the past 7 or 8 years, as more and more organizations were saying that they were initiating AI-driven initiatives, this person said to me, well, that'll never happen. You know, I've gone through a whole generation of people saying that, you know, AI was, at the forefront of emerging and it never happened. So I don't believe it. But actually this time it is happening, and it is happening because of the proliferation of data and the greater computing power. So to the degree that data can be put in the hands of business decision makers through self-service, those are all steps in the right direction, but data is complex and messy, and there's no simple set of steps an organization can follow to guarantee results. But the more that individuals, business leaders become data literate, the more they understand the tools that and capabilities that are available to them, and the more that they play with data themselves, so they learn what are the key questions. All of that is a step in the right direction.
And so then how do we think about Thinking about failing fast and learning faster, how do we think about doing that in organizations that are currently resistant to experimentation and resistant to changing the ways they work to better leverage data?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've answered that in a couple of different ways. And that is that, for example, in financial services, a company like Capital One, you know, they've existed roughly 30 years. The founders came out of data and analytics background. They didn't have the legacy heritage that other major banks did. So they could truly use data to innovate within their businesses. If you're a legacy organization that's existed for many decades or well over 100 years, being data-driven really requires you to operate in ways that you haven't in the past. And data is an asset that flows across the organization. So typically, there's been no single point of management. So there's that degree of complexity. And it requires organizations to change. And change is never something that organizations adapt to easily because everybody pays lip service to it. In other words, they say, oh, we have to become data driven. But when it comes down to actually changing what each person needs to do, there can be considerable resistance because there's gains and losses of responsibility, power, and even compensation. Yeah, so it's a challenge and it's an opportunity. And there are companies in other industries, I have an article coming out in the next week about Levi's brands. You know, they started as making basically clothes for gold miners and lumberjacks and railway men and the like. And, you know, now they'll be 170 years old and they've really evolved into a leader in the application of AI and data and analytics. But at the same time, you think about it, they're fundamentally in a business that's a fashion business, and by nature, fashions change. So you have to adapt to support, you know, different audiences. And in the case of Levi brands, you know, what started off as the American working man's outfit, later by the 1960s became the outfit of the rebels and those in the counterculture. And by the 1980s and 1990s, it had become the outfit of the, you know, fashionable and the trendy. So, you know, if you're in an organization where change is part of your DNA, it's easier. But if you're in an industry where risk aversion is one of the key drivers, it creates greater challenges.
And so what can our listeners do as individuals? What sort of one piece of advice that you can give them that they can take away in action today to more deeply embed data-driven insights into their work and the decisions that they're part of?
I'd say the most important factors are patience and persistence. Data is a journey. It unfolds over time. Those who are successful learn from experience. That's the idea of fail fast, learn faster. So it's something that doesn't happen overnight. There's not a blueprint that everyone can follow. One has to learn from experience, be patient, stay at it, not give up, and that persistence will yield good results in the long term.
That's great. So everyone needs to come up with their questions and start asking their questions and just start doing it, right?
That's right. Start doing it.
That's right. If our audience wants to learn more about this space, how should they go about doing that?
Well, you're welcome to pick up the book, Fail Fast, Learn Faster, Lessons in Data-Driven Leadership in an Age of Disruption, Big Data and AI. My email is rbean@newvantage.com. My articles appear regularly in Forbes, MIT Sloan Management Review, and Harvard Business Review. And you can see all of those articles over the past decade at www.newvantage.com.
Great. And we will be sure to include that information in the show notes. This has been a great conversation, Randy. Hopefully our listeners can take your advice and apply it to their own organizations and communities. If you'd like to learn more about how you can bring these kinds of conversations to your organization, please visit us at blueswiftconsulting.com to schedule a free discovery call. Thank you again, Randy.
Thank you, Alyssa. Appreciate it.